Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you via Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Great to be with you. Hope you're on your way to a fabulous new year. So much NFL to talk about. Hour number one, Charles Davis from the NFL on Fox. He will be joining me. We will talk about that crazy finish last night in Seattle. Charles was doing the game with the Packers and the Lions yesterday. A strong second half for Green Bay as they're able to get a bye. So we're going to talk NFL in hour number one. Nate McMillan and the Indiana Pacers, they are really a team that no one's talking about. The coach of the Indiana Pacers joins me at the top of hour number two. And hour number three, we'll get into the college football, and of course, we know that it is going to be LSU and Clemson. Brett McMurphy, college football insider from Stadium Network, he'll be on with me, and we'll finish the show talking with the Hall of Fame writer, Mark Stein, from the New York Times about the NBA. All right, so we start with last night. How come nobody is talking about Russell Wilson today? How on earth can you have a delay of game penalty, okay, in that situation? With a veteran quarterback, a Super Bowl winning quarterback, how is it that they weren't even close to snapping the ball? How on earth can that possibly happen? I mean, they spiked the ball, so now the play clock is reset, and you're not even close to snapping the ball, and there's a delay of game penalty, which cost them, in all likelihood, the division championship. I mean, why is that not a big topic of conversation? I don't understand that. I mean, how many times do we have to see Seattle screw up the ball at the one-yard line? At some point. And Russell Wilson's a tremendous player. We get that. But that's the quarterback's responsibility. And whether they're trying to get Marshawn Lynch on the field or not, I mean, the quarterback there's got to take control of the game. So then they're backed up 5 yards. And as we all know, Dre Greenlaw with, you know, the best tackle of the year. I mean, that's textbook football. Now, I know there's a lot of people saying that there should have been a pass interference on the play before. You know, the NFL said that they did look at that back in the city, and they didn't see any pass interference. No pass interference. Haven't we been doing this every single week of the NFL season? We still, as we get ready to flip the calendar to 2020, you know what pass interference is. I know what pass interference is, but the league doesn't. How does that work? How is it that everyone in America now knows what pass interference is and not except for the NFL? I mean, you're not going to call pass interference on that play? They didn't even stop the game because they didn't feel it was necessary. But forget about all of that. You cannot take a delay of game penalty there. Absolutely awful. Now, Charles Davis is going to be coming on with me in the second segment. And Charles has done the 49ers a lot this year. He did the game at Baltimore for Fox. Then he did the game at New Orleans. He did the game last Saturday. So he knows the Niners inside and out because he's had them several times this year. Are they good enough now to win the Super Bowl? I don't think there's any question that they're good enough to win the Super Bowl. They absolutely destroyed Green Bay during the regular season in Santa Clara. They were able to go and win in New Orleans in a shootout at the end of the game. Why can't they represent the NFC? And, oh yeah, by the way, in Baltimore, they lost on a last-second kick. So San Francisco, they're loaded. And they hit and they'll play defense. And they run the ball effectively. And they were starting to get healthy at the right time. So we're going to talk a lot of NFL in hour number one. If you want to call the show, 800-636-8686. You can email the show, Rome, at haveittake.com. I am with you always at seeming like this time of the year. Last year I was in here on New Year's Eve. It's great to be in here. I was doing an NBA game last night in Denver and was just happy as heck that everything was on time and I was able to get down here to Southern California. It's always great sitting in here for Jim. And we got Black Monday, right? Freddie Kitchens is out in Cleveland. Pat Shurmur is out in New York as the head coach of the Giants. We know that Jason Garrett is going to be gone. It's just a matter of if it's going to be today, is it going to be tomorrow, is it going to be Wednesday? And it's something else I want to talk about Cleveland. Now, Cleveland was a mess this year, All right? 6 wins, 10 losses. Everyone thought that they would be this great team. Odell Beckham. How come Tom Coughlin couldn't manage this guy? Ben McAdoo couldn't manage this guy. And Freddie Kitchens, and it was a disaster. Now, I'm not blaming everything on Beckham. But at some point, when does the distraction hurt the football team to a point where it's counterproductive to winning? Now, here's something else about Cleveland. I want to ask the clones this question. Last year, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. This year, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones. If I put you as a general manager, and I said you have a choice of taking those two quarterbacks from last year's draft or the two quarterbacks from this year's draft, which direction are you going? I know what I'm doing. I'm going with Murray and Jones over Mayfield and Darnold. And it doesn't mean that those guys will never be good, but based on what I saw from the rookie quarterbacks this year, to me, Murray and Jones are ahead of Mayfield and Darnold. And when I talk to people around the NFL, they talk about Baker Mayfield and they use the term immature. Well, that better get fixed in a real hurry in the NFL. You got a quarterback that's got some maturity issues. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what people that are close to the situation say. Now, it could be worse. It could be worse. You could be a fan of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And you could have a quarterback that can't read defenses. And to make it worse, you could have a quarterback, and his name could be Jameis Winston. And after ending the season with a pick six in overtime, he gets up in front of the media and he says this.
We all know. Come on. I guess we know what we got to fix. There's no reason for me to be specific. You know, you look at my numbers, I'm balling. You know, I got to stop giving the ball to the other team. All right. Like, it's not a trick question.
Do you worry that these turnovers will be a reason why they don't bring you back here?
That's the last thing on my mind. I'm focused on how I can get better, because I know I eliminate those. I'm gonna be the best. So that's bar none. You better check your sheet. You know, I eliminate those. I'm gonna be the best.
I just checked my sheet. It says right here, Jameis Winston, delusional. That's what my sheet says. My sheet says Jameis Winston, 5 years in the NFL, still can't read defenses. Underneath that, it says delusional. He has the nerve to get in front of the media and say that after throwing his 30th interception? Who cares how many yards you throw for? Who cares how many touchdowns you throw for? You had 30 interceptions. And oh yeah, by the way, the one that ended the season was a pick six. The exact same way Jameis Winston started his career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. His first pass ever was a pick six. Now, you know what? If the guy's a rookie, I'm okay with this. If the guy's in his second year, I'm okay with that. Third year, I want to see a big-time improvement. Fourth year, I better not see that type of mistake. And in year five, I better not see a guy throw 30 interceptions. And then have the nerve to come out in front of everybody and talk about how great he is. That's basically what he said. Going to be the best. He's gonna fix that problem. How come you didn't fix the problem last year? How come you didn't fix the problem 2 years ago? I mean, that's brutal. Absolutely brutal. So, as I said, if you're a fan of the Cleveland Browns, it could be worse. Because you could be a fan of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you could have a quarterback who has the nerve to get in front of the media and make comments like that. All right, I want to talk about a coach that's not going to win Coach of the Year. If you watched the Miami Dolphins play in September, and I told you at the end of 16 weeks, the Miami Dolphins would be 5-11, and oh yeah, by the way, in week 17, they would go to Foxborough and beat the Patriots and send the Patriots from a 2-seed to a 3-seed. You would have said there's no chance in the world. What were we all saying back in September? The Dolphins are the worst team in football. They're tanking. They're getting rid of this player. They're getting rid of that player. Nobody wants to play there, right? Remember what the narrative was in September? Everyone was looking to get out. How about Brian Flores and the job they did in Miami at 5-11? Pretty amazing. I give him a lot of credit. In that situation, with everyone thinking that they were going to go 0-16 or 1-15 and draft the best quarterback in football, that's a heck of a job. No one's talking about that. That's one heck of a coaching job down there in Miami. All right, as we end the decade last night, most disappointing teams. I already talked about one, the Cleveland Browns. 6-10 with everything they invested in the offseason. How about the Rams at 9-7? They were a shoo-in, right, to win the NFC West. Everyone thought the Rams were going to be the team based on what we saw last year. 9-7. How about the worst performance of 2019? That's easy. That would be the Oakland Raiders in their final game at the Coliseum against Jacksonville. That goes under embarrassing. How you can do that to the Raider Nation. How you can come out against a terrible Jacksonville team. Terrible. And lose, you deserve to get booed off the field. And speaking of the Raiders, John Gruden. Yeah, I'm tired of hearing about what a great coach John Gruden is. I don't want to hear it anymore. Yeah, I know what he won in Tampa. It's a long time ago. And I know he's very entertaining on TV, and he's a great soundbite. And I love hearing what he has to say, too. But can we just lay off what a great coach John Gruden is, please? This is a Raiders team that went to New York and got embarrassed against the Jets. Then the following week, in the biggest game of the year, they are not even competitive on the road to Kansas City, which, by the way, back then was for the division. Then they come home, have a horrible second half and lose to Tennessee, beat a bad Chargers team. But that Jacksonville game, the last game, the last home game, that goes under the worst performance of the year in the National Football League. I mean, if there's only one game you have to win all year in front of those loyal fans and that crazy Raider Nation, it was that game. That, to me, is the worst performance of the season. And then they followed up with a loss yesterday, meaningless game in Denver. That's a bad job right there by the Raiders in the second half of the year. That is a horrible job. All right, we've got a lot to talk about. Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. He's going to join me coming up next right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
We roll right along here on The Jim Rome Show. It's always great when we can talk with Charles Davis from the NFL on Fox. He was in Motown yesterday doing the Packers and the Lions, and he joins us right now. Charles, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, Grant. I hope you're doing great, you and your family, and may 2020 be your best one yet.
I appreciate that, Charles. I want to get to the game last night because I'm still trying to figure out how on earth a veteran quarterback, a Super Bowl-winning quarterback at home in that situation can have a delay a game penalty. And what is so baffling to me, Charles, they weren't even close to snapping the ball. They weren't even at the line of scrimmage. How does that happen?
I think we're going to look at Russell Wilson. It makes sense. I think that was on the bench. I think it was a malfunction there about who they had in the ball game, what they were trying to accomplish, and that didn't make any sense. That was a little strange because the first thing is when you look at the time clock there, all right, and where they were at that point in the game, Marshawn Lynch trots out on the field. Well, if you're going to run it there, then it's a quick scramble. If you don't get it, you're trying to get back to line of scrimmage, you're going to have to clock it at that point, Grant, and now you're in the fourth down anyway. So that was a little surprising, unless you wanted him on the field and had an idea that you're going to run play action, you know, and show people that you might run the football. You know, the flip side of that is you have him on the field and you have redemption. And now you run the ball in a key situation and you don't throw it like they did in the Super Bowl. But it seemed like they didn't have their thought process down, and that forced them to take that time out there. And it was just, to me, it just didn't make any sense. You know, when people think about play callers and you think about situations, the thought process is always ahead. You've got to be thinking ahead and see the bigger picture. I don't know if they had a debate over there. I don't know what was going on. But as much as that comes back to Russell, you know, he can't run anything if personnel's not correct. And that's where everything kind of fell apart.
Charles, I know that it's got to be unbelievably frustrating to be announcing NFL football every week, and still, I don't think anyone knows what pass interference is. The play before that, I mean, it certainly looked like pass interference, but again, we've seen that all year where what we think is pass interference is not reviewed, which it could have been because it was in the final 2 minutes. Yep. The league office said they did look at it, and they didn't see any pass interference, thus they didn't stop the game. How frustrating is that? I mean, I know you have Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino you guys go to for expertise in that area, but I mean, it's still so baffling to everybody, Charles.
It is, and I agree with you totally, Grant. And the thing about it is, when replay came about in our lifetime, I think a lot of people have probably missed because their lifetime's a little bit different, right? We brought replay into the NFL, and then we actually eliminated replay and went back to the old way. You know, we tried to put the genie back in the bottle, we tried to put the toothpaste back in the tube, whatever analogy you want to use. And we realized that's not going to work either. Once you've introduced it, it's hard to take it away, so we brought it back. But what people have to always keep in mind is the people watching replay are still human, and it's not going to, that part isn't going to change, I hope, because otherwise it's just automatons running the game. So you're still going to have what your eyes see versus what their eyes see, and it's not always as dramatic as, you remember that internet sensation, what color is this dress?
Right.
Remember that one?
Right.
It's not going to be as dramatic as that. But at the same time, what our eyes see, what their eyes see. But to me, on that one, there was so much contact, Grant. I thought that it warranted it. Okay, to me, it warranted that being either overturned or whatever it was. But they have been steadfastly sticking by the call as much as possible, and that's why I am not bullish on the idea that the pass interference rule stays in. Remember, we talked about this all season long. This is a one-year deal, and it has to be voted into being permanent or not.
Right.
I'm not bullish on it being permanent. And the way that they're administering it, it's almost like they're saying, we don't want it to be permanent. And frankly, I'm okay with that. I really am. I just hate to say, you know, like as you've said, we really, at times, we don't know what pass interference is, and we still at times struggle with what a catch is. And you would think those things are fairly elementary. But they are actually the things that when we play our turkey bowls and our backyard football games, those games usually disintegrate over calls like that. Don't they?
Yes, they do.
I mean, yeah. That usually someone screams at each other, and they go at it, and someone takes their ball, and they go home, and that's kind of the end of the whole thing. So they're having the same trouble in the big leagues that we would have when we have our turkey bowls.
Charles, you've had a chance to announce the 49ers three games coming down the stretch.
Yep.
The Baltimore
yep.
game, the New Orleans game, two sensational games back-to-back. You did the game last Saturday in Santa Clara. What impresses you the most about the 49ers?
I think that they're probably underrated on their grit factor, which always gets ascribed to Seattle, because remember, they were very involved with Angela Duckworth, the author of the book Grit, and that toughness that Seattle's always carried with them. And that's not to say Seattle isn't, because they are. Look at last night. That game should have been locked down. We never should have even gotten down to that part, should we, Grant?
That's correct.
I mean, San Francisco had the thing salted away, but anytime Russell Wilson's on the other side, you've got a problem on your hands. And they darn near got it done again, throwing to guys like John Ursua, Jacob Hollister, need I go on? I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, we talk about Brady and who he's throwing to, and he always gets that one. I dare anyone to name the receivers that he was playing with down the stretch, and they still almost got that thing done. So you could never go away, but San Francisco found a way to win it. They found a way to hang in there, and just a couple of weeks removed from Julio Jones catching a pass, getting clocked by Jimmy Ward, but finding a way, because Julio is such a physical presence, to get the tip of the ball over the goal line and lose. This time, Dre Greenlaw makes the hit on Hollister. And if you watch the replay again, if the ball's in Hollister's right arm, it's a touchdown.
How about that?
But because it was in his left arm and on the hit, and Greenlaw made a terrific play, it's just short. So just about within a 3-week span, San Francisco loses one that close, wins one that close. But I do think there's a toughness to them, an element of hanging in there, an element of finding a way to win that I think is a little bit underrated.
Dre Greenlaw, Dan Buns. How about that, Charles?
Yo, I love that. You just went Dan Buns on Pete Johnson in the Super Bowl. And Pete Johnson, at the time, back in those days, he looked like he was a 300-pound tailback.
Right.
I mean, he was huge. Yeah. He was like the LeVon Kirkland of running backs.
Yeah.
You know, when LeVon was playing linebacker at 300 pounds, That's what it looked like with Pete Johnson. Dan Bunn's making that play on the pass on the goal line. I mean, that's a huge hit, huge play. I love that, how you link them together in San Francisco more.
Charles, you were in Detroit, and Green Bay really looks sluggish. As a matter of fact, your sideline reporter, forgive me for forgetting the name.
Pam Oliver.
Yeah, Pam Oliver was talking about how, you know, Green Bay was sleepwalking in the first half, according to their coach. In the second half, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron was not on his game like usual until the fourth quarter, which was kind of odd, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And it was interesting because Kevin Burkhart and I, in the first half, we said, I very, very rarely do I get things, totally on. But I just said, Kevin, to me, this team appears like they're sleepwalking. And it's one of those things where you're trying to get them up for a 3-11 team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they understand what they have at stake, but sometimes it just doesn't work when you're playing, blah, blah, blah. And then when Pam talked with Matt LaFleur, and he used the word sleepwalking, I did a happy dance in the booth, like, yes, the head coach co-signed, and he didn't know what I had said. So every now and then you kind of lock in on a team. But you're right, Aaron Rodgers was off for a lot, the first half especially. And the second half, they kind of changed up what they did. And my thought process going into halftime was, folks, this is not about halftime adjustments, which is one of the most overused things that we do as announcers. And I'm sure I'm as guilty as anyone, but it's not halftime adjustments as much as, okay, we had a game plan going in. Is it not working because they have actually stuffed us, or because we're not executing? And for Green Bay, it was because they weren't executing. So what they did was simply just kind of dial back on the deeper shots, and Aaron Rodgers started taking essentially what they were giving them, and they started moving the ball better. And I'm not saying it was clean and pretty and all of a sudden, bang, bang, because it took them a while still. Detroit kept leaving them out there. And that's what teams that are 3-12-1 do. You leave teams out there and they come and get you. I don't know if you saw the graphic we showed. This year, Detroit, I think, blew, I can't remember if it was 7 or 8 now. Hmm. I think it's right in that range. Fourth quarter leads to lose. They led in 14 of 16 games this year at some point or another, and they were 3-12-1. I don't know what else to say. And trust me, Grant, when it was 17-3, Detroit, I looked at Kevin, he looked at me, we essentially said, if Green Bay scores a touchdown, we're going to see the same thing play out down the stretch with Detroit. And sure enough, it got to 17-10, and we're like, we know where this one's going. And sure enough, it held up, and it went exactly that way. And that's where Detroit has their offseason to work on finding a way to get off that merry-go-round. But for Green Bay, they've got to be smoother in things. They were fortunate enough to sleepwalk through this one. I don't think that'll be a problem in the playoffs. They'll want to run the ball, but I'm telling you, sure as we're talking, Aaron Rodgers is going to have to be Aaron Rodgers at least once in the playoffs for Green Bay to advance deep. There's going to be a game, Grant. We're going to need Aaron Rodgers to be Aaron Rodgers. And he was much more of that in the second half. But, boy, did he miss some shots in the first.
Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. Nobody has given Philadelphia a chance to do much, but that was the same story a month ago. Charles, I was watching that game. I watched every play of that game. And even during the course of the game, they were losing players left and right. They came in with players I had never heard of before. I got to tell you, Carson Wentz has taken a lot of heat. We get that. But I'll tell you, I don't know if anyone's played better than he did coming down the stretch for the Philadelphia Eagles.
It's way too early to start writing his legacy, but people have started to believe what they, okay, this is Carson Wentz, right? Tougher games, we don't win them, blah, 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 right? You know what's been out there. You know that narrative. Tell me if I'm off track. And I think this last month has done more to help his narrative than anything else, because Alshon Jeffrey's not playing. DeSean Jackson's not playing. Nelson Aguilar's not playing. Zach Ertz didn't play in this one, okay? Deontay Burnett was a receiver for them. Greg Ward was a receiver.
Unbelievable.
J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Okay, and then Jordan Howard, we thought was going to go. He doesn't go, correct? So Miles Sanders plays, and then he gets dinged, and Boston Scott has a big game. So if anyone can call you and tell you they know where Boston Scott went to school that is not an alum of his college, let me know when you get that call. All right? this is who he's playing with. So to me, it is changing the narrative of who he is, because he is playing his best football, I think, of his career right now, including the year he should have been MVP, because of who he's playing with and how he's rallying that team. And all that rumbling and discontent that we heard midseason in their locker room, that, you know, people were saying Carson's not this, Carson's not that, he might very well stride to their locker room today and go, hey, I want everybody's attention. Forget all of you who are critics of me. And by the way, if you're a critic and you're not playing, don't come back now. Because they're playing their best football with these guys.
It's amazing.
And Brandon Brooks got hurt. So I just give him a ton of credit for how he's playing right now.
Charles, final thought for you. I want to switch to college football. You are someone that covered big-time college football on Fox, and so you're still very close to what goes on. You played in the SEC. I can't wait for the 13th. I think this is a classic matchup, Charles.
Ooh. I'm with you. And I thought the semifinals played out similar to what I expected, although I don't know that anyone expected 500 yards of total offense, 7 touchdowns in the first half at LSU. But I did not expect Oklahoma to beat them. And frankly, I just thought Oklahoma might be able to run with them a little bit with their offense. But eventually LSU would get a stop or two, and that would be the gap, and that'd be all she wrote. I didn't realize it'd be that big a gap. I mean, we're talking about Oklahoma.
That's unbelievable.
And it was entirely outclassed.
Yeah.
That was stunning to me. And then you flip it over to the other side. That was a game I expected. I think we all did. And, yes, it was a very controversial call because I thought it was a catch and a fumble, and Ohio State could return it for a touchdown. But I understand why they didn't, and it's just difficult. But give Clemson a ton of credit. Yeah. That young quarterback can play. So I think we've got a heck of a game on our hands.
Sure.
Before the whole thing started, Grant, I picked Clemson and LSU to beat for the title.
Wow.
I picked Clemson to win it, and everybody's looking at me like I'm nuts, and I get it. LSU's awfully good. But I said going into it, three of the teams could win the title, one could not. And Oklahoma was a team I said could not. I said they can't beat any of the other three, in my own humble opinion.
You know, you mentioned
great program. Yeah. They were outmatched by those three teams.
You know, you mentioned the quarterback, and I'm looking at these two quarterbacks with Burrow and Lawrence, and it's always difficult to try to forecast. But if you forecast the next level, which of those two do you think has the brightest ceiling and the highest ceiling?
This is one of the times, Grant, I'm not going to make a pick on it because I think they both do. Burrow has impressed me beyond belief because quarterbacks typically have a clunker game or two during the season. Tell me where I find it with Burrow.
Yeah, didn't happen.
And when games were on the line and the bigger games, he played at his best. So I give him a ton of credit there. And Lawrence, I think people kind of fell asleep on him after a somewhat slow start. And now you're seeing why we're so excited about him. That running play may have done more for him than anything he's ever thrown before. Because now you realize he's not Josh Allen, but it's Josh Allen-esque, isn't it?
Boy, it sure is. Big
right?
time. Absolutely.
He, forget, he's 6'6", and he's chewing up ground with those strides, plus the toughness factor after the big hit that he took. Missed a play, came back, carried him home. I'm crazy about both of these young men and want to learn a little bit more about them before we get to that. Remember, Lawrence has one more year left to play.
That's right.
Burrow, we know, is coming out, and you know every mock draft now will have him going number one to Cincinnati.
Charles, you're the best. Happy New Year, my friend. Thank you so much for taking the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Grant. Happy New Year to you and yours, and everyone can hear our voices.
The best, Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. Open segment when we return, 800-636-8686. That's 800-636-8686. Get on deck right now. Bottom of the hour, we now have our sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
And it is time to ask the pros, where you, the clones, get to ask me a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. And submit your question. Be listening later in the show when I might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, how about the phone calls? 800-636-8686. We get to Greg in Oregon. Hello, Greg.
Hey, thanks so much for, excuse me, for taking my call. I'd just like to offer a few comments on what I consider the continued coaching ineptitude of Pete Carroll and his offensive coordinators. First of all, you recall in the ill-fated game against Super Bowl against the Patriots after Javon Kurse caught that ball inside the five-yard line, Seattle had two timeouts left, but they immediately had to blow one of them because they couldn't get the play call off.
Yep.
And the rest is history. Now, last night, I agree with Charles Davis. I don't know how much responsibility Russell Wilson owes to the delay of game penalty, but my sense is, based upon that coaching staff, is that there was confusion once again on the sidelines between Carroll and this time his offensive coordinator Schottenheimer for absolutely inexcusable ability to get a play call off. And the last thing I'd say is that, dating back to his years at USC, Pete Carroll has always been frivolous with his use of timeouts. And last night at the end of the game, instead of having one in reserve, they had absolutely none.
Appreciate the call. I don't disagree with the coaching decision. You got to have the right personnel. But at the end of the day, it's the quarterback's job to get the ball snapped, regardless of the personnel on the field. In other words, Russell Wilson didn't even look like he was aware that the play clock was expiring. They look baffled. I don't understand that. Yeah, there's a lot of blame to go around. And I would agree with you. I'd start with the coaching staff. I mean, Charles said, you know, you got to have the right personnel on the field or even 11 guys on the field. That was bad. All right, you can always email me, roman@haveitake.com. RA says, Jameis, greater than Baker by a long shot. How about Jake in Buffalo? If you get rid of the mistakes, I can be the best. I'm balling out there. Thanks, Parody Larry. How about Hemsky in Tucson? Napes, all the clones know that Sam from Brooklyn is on hold. Run him. War, the manual buzzer. Yeah, I know Sam's going to call me. He's going to talk to me about Carmelo Anthony, who finally has a team to play for. So I can't, you know, it's the holidays. I got to be nice. Carmelo Anthony is back in the NBA. What's wrong with the Blazers? 14 and 18? How bad is the bottom part of the West right now? That's the eighth spot in the West at 14 and 18. So if you're a Carmelo Anthony fan, like Sam in Brooklyn, you know what Sam now is doing? Sam is staying up real late to watch the Blazers because the games come on at 10. And so Sam's sitting wherever he lives in Brooklyn with the NBA League Pass. And he's salivating because he now gets to watch Carmelo Anthony back in the NBA. Not helping the Blazers win, but he is playing. Nobody's helping the Blazers win right now. They're, to me, one of the most puzzling teams in the NBA. They really are. Four games under 500. But even with that said, that right now puts you in eighth spot. Speaking of the NBA, in hour number two, we're going to talk a little NBA basketball with Nate McMillan. I think he's doing an amazing job with the team nobody's talking about, the Indiana Pacers. They are 21-12. You know, and again, I get the fact that everybody wants to talk about the Greek Freak. I do too. Guy's amazing. Toronto has played much better than I think anyone could have imagined when they lose Kawhi and Danny Green, and they're impressive. They are really an impressive team. I don't know if they're championship caliber. Milwaukee is right there. Of course, the game on Christmas Day where Philadelphia handled them pretty well. But I don't put too much stock into any results in the regular season. Milwaukee, I thought they would take a step back a little bit without Malcolm Brogdon, who is now on the Indiana Pacers. And again, no one is talking about Indiana. What happens if and when they get Victor Oladipo back? They could be right up there in the East. I mean, if you add Oladipo, assuming that Victor Oladipo can be close to where he was, that all of a sudden looks like a very formidable team. So in the hour number two at the top, we'll talk to Nate McMillan, who's done a marvelous job. Then we'll get back to football. We'll take your phone calls at 800-636-8686. A couple of things I want to get into before we get to the third hour. You know, it's hard to believe the decade is over. And I'm just curious, what are the best moments of the NFL, you know, in the last 10 years and the worst moments? And boy, the league changed so much. And I want to get into that, you know, after we talk with Nate McMillan. I want to get into how football went from being the game that most of us grew up with, a game that you were allowed to hit and you were allowed to do this and you were allowed to do that. And then the advent of science and concussions and everything else changed the game dramatically. And so is the game better now, or is it worse? I think most people would say the latter. The game is not better now. The game is not the way it used to be. But is that the best? Is that for the best because of the safety elements? You know, those are all things that we're going to talk about after we get some NBA talk at the top of the hour. Hour number three, we'll talk college football. And, of course, we'll break down LSU and Clemson with Brett McMurphy from Stadium Network. And then Mark Stein, who, great for Mark. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in Springfield, Mass. I was actually there for those ceremonies, and he'll come on with us. He does a phenomenal job covering the NBA for the New York Times. He was in L.A. last night for the Lakers and the Mavs. Boy, the Lakers, they look good. Actually, they look very good. Actually, they look great. I know they went through that four-game skid, but if they're healthy, and that means LeBron James and Anthony Davis, when we get to the spring, look out, because they are the real deal. They're good. You know, and if Kyle Kuzma, who has gotten up off the mat, so to speak, now all of a sudden, after a horrendous start, and again, he was hurt. You know, I don't think a lot of fans don't allow players to, you know, take time to come back from an injury. They think, oh, you're hurt. You missed all this time. You should be coming back and scoring 25 every night. It doesn't work like that. You know, guys miss a lot of time. A couple of new players. Takes a while to get acclimated. So the Lakers, they are rolling. They are rolling big time. So, again, hour number two, we'll take the phone calls at 800-636-8686 after we do Nate McMillan at the top of the hour. We'll talk about the Eastern Conference. We'll talk about Nate. We'll break down a little bit of why no one is talking about the Pacers. Nate's probably fine with that. You know, he's probably fine with that. Probably is absolutely fine with that. All right, why don't we get to Tyler calling from Tennessee. Tyler, you're on the Jim Rome Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to get in on the Giants, man. They have been making bad decision after bad decision for years. I finally jumped off the team this year after they traded Odell for one first-round pick and then drafted Daniel Jones at six overall. Like, come on, man. They have a chance to right the ship, fire Gettleman, bring back Tom Coughlin, keep Eli for another year. Trade Daniel Jones. I mean, come on. The Cardinals did it with Josh Rosen last year.
Hey, Sam.
I'm just saying.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year, Sam. Daniel Jones right now looks like the steal of the draft, okay? I mean, let's just call it the way it is. The Giants trading Odell Beckham was the best move they made. I mean, how did he do in Cleveland? I mean, you were never going to win with Odell Beckham. Distraction, distraction. That is the worst market in the world for Odell Beckham to be at. Odell Beckham in New York is like, you know, pouring gasoline onto a fire. That was a disaster. You know, the worst thing that ever happened to Odell Beckham was that great catch he had against Dallas. That's the worst thing that happened to him, because he became front page news and the sensation all over America. And he changed from that point forward, in my opinion. You know, gee, how do I look coming onto the field? Now I got a watch on. Hey, how do you like my cleats? You know, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. How about winning some games first? You know, same thing when the Giants made the playoffs. Where's Odell Beckham on the Monday before the Green Bay game? He's down in South Beach on a yacht with his friends. That's a great message. That's not a distraction, right? Then it's 20 below zero for the playoff game at Green Bay. Let's have Odell run onto the field in only his shorts to see how tough he is. Then on the first drive of the game, on a big third down, Eli Manning with a perfect pass to Odell Beckham, drops it. Second drive, perfect pass, should be touchdown. Odell dropped it. Talk cheap. Go out and produce for once. Go out and win a big game for once. Go out and be a complete team member instead of me, me, me. Look at my watch. Look at my shoes. Look at this. Look at that. How about go out and win a big game for once in your career? That's not asking too much, is it? All right, we will talk some NBA basketball with Nate McMillan, the head coach of the Pacers. That is going to be coming on next, and then we'll get your phone calls at 800-636-8686. 1 hour in the books, 2 hours left. Grant Napier sitting in for Romy right here on CBS Sports Radio.